Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Marty Garrity, Amara Nenya, Dan Johnson, and Christine Svensson. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you would like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And if you want to go to the website, it's beyondthebeltway.com. Both the audio and video version of this program each and every Sunday night. If you've got a computer anywhere in the world, you can watch, listen, and participate in this program. Pass that on to your friends around the world. We have lots to talk about. It's going to be a busy 2 hours of discussion this evening. We will spend some time talking about Donald Trump and the debate coming up for the Republicans. However, there's a bigger story, basically, in the world of politics right now, and that is for the last 48 hours, there is the possibility, or at least allegedly, the Vice President of the United States, Joe Biden, is considering whether or not he will challenge Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination. You may recall that a couple of months ago on this program, we had a gentleman by the name of William Pierce on the program, and he is the executive director of the Draft Biden for President movement. We had booked him to be on the program, and between the time we booked him and the time he came up on board the show, a couple of days before that, Bo Biden passed away. And so the last time William was on the program, we spent a great deal of time talking about that tremendous loss in Joe Biden's life and politically what it might mean for the vice president's future, both, you know, as a person and as a political commodity. And so we invited a couple of weeks ago, we invited William to be a guest on the program again today. And then, of course, the actions of the last 48 hours indicates that there is, according to the published reports and Maureen Dowd and the New York Times, that there's serious consideration by Vice President Biden to challenge Hillary Clinton. However, late this afternoon, we got word that Mr. Pierce could not appear tonight. It appears that he has been called off the show by higher up somewhere, maybe in the White House. But again, he was very kind to reach out to a good friend of his, Amara Nenya, who joins us. And thank you very much, filling sort of the Democratic chair. So let's begin with the process of, now, you're not here as a representative of the Draft Biden movement. And according to what William told us, he's not officially representing the Vice President of the United States. So I'm very interested to know how he was called off the show today. But what do you make of the possibility of a run by Joe Biden? Would that be good or bad for the Democratic Party?
Well, I think it would be a good thing. I think that there's a distinct split between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. They're sort of at two extremes on the spectrum, with Hillary Clinton being considered more of a corporate Democrat, more of a centrist, and Bernie Sanders, who's been deemed a socialist, more on the far left. So I think Biden represents somewhere in the middle, someone who is likable, doesn't have as high unfavorable polling, and gives a third option for the Democratic Party.
Let me get a reaction from our other Democrat, Dan Johnson. Dan, what is your take on the boomlet for Biden?
I think he should do it. I think it's great. I'm a big Biden fan. I mean, I like high speed rail, and nobody's a bigger train advocate in the country than Joe Biden. I don't think.
Would you endorse him if he ran?
You know, I might. I like Bernie Sanders quite a bit, and I'm sort of down with Bernie Sanders, but if Joe Biden were to run, I'd...
You're down with Bernie Sanders as up for Bernie Sanders.
Correct, yeah.
Just sort of interpreting
that's
that
my hip cat way.
Well,
to
I know, I'm just, you know, but we're bi-generational, Dan, so I want to... What's up is down, what's in is out. I just want to interpret, okay? You're down with that.
Yeah.
Well, let's turn to the Republicans, and Christine Svensson, let me get your take. I mean, you have been here, you've been very critical of Hillary Clinton in your many appearances on this program, but as a Republican, does Joe Biden represent maybe a tougher opponent than Hillary Clinton?
I think he is. I've been saying all along, just for my own sake, because I love these debates, whether they're primary or general, I want Joe Biden in there. I love the man for who he is. I love his authenticity. I think he's a ridiculous person. I mean, a kind, warm, generous person, but he says ridiculous things on the stump. That's what I mean by that. And he has some ideas that I don't agree with. But you know what? To me, he represents America, and I don't look at Bernie Sanders that way. And frankly, I mean, Hillary Clinton, I've already spoke about her, and you have my thoughts about her. So I welcome him into the race. I think he'd probably be the best candidate for the Democrats.
Marty Gerdy, you are also a card-carrying conservative Republican. Christine is a conservative as well, but again, you're very conservative.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
What's your take on Joe Biden?
I think that he would be harder to beat than Hillary Clinton. I'd love to see Hillary. If she actually survives to be the nominee, which I really don't expect to happen, I think that she would be easier to beat than would Joe Biden.
Allegedly, according to the published reports, there are some high-placed and well-heeled Democrats that are getting nervous because they're seeing some of these polls. They're seeing her unfavorable rating at 57%, and I think his favorable rating is about 57 or more. So is that more than just one or two people, do you think, Amara, or how does a groundswell like that, you know, get going?
Well, I think him declaring, coming out to say whether or not he's running is a big part of it. But I think that we've heard those rumblings. So we know that Hillary does have some very high negatives, even though she came out early and came out strong. But we also have seen with Bernie Sanders, for example, he came out fairly strong, I think caught some of the Democrats off guard with how strong he came out. And so with Biden, I think making an affirmative statement as to whether or not he's going to run, I think that will really set off a groundswell beyond the rumblings that we're hearing now.
Now, according to the published reports in Maureen Dowd's description today, which was a very poignant description in the New York Times, was that on nearing his death, Beau Biden said that he wished that he could convince his father to run because he knows that he thinks that's where he's bad. And his other son, Hunter, supposedly also wants Joe Biden to run. What are the pluses and minuses of just that story as a rationale for running, Dan?
I mean, it's just so touching what the man's been through. So it's hard to think if your son thinks you should run. And it's not like he hasn't run before, right? So,
right.
And he's a pro. So I guess I'd say two things. One, it's certainly compelling to say, look, I've been the vice president in one of the most successful administrations in the last 80 years. Of course, I should continue on and carry that torch. But also, the hard part for Joe Biden is it's not crystal clear what constituency he grabs within the Democratic primary electorate mm-hmm. that Hillary hasn't already locked up. You know, he's not nearly as progressive, hardcore progressive as Bernie Sanders, where a lot of the activists are. So it's not like there's, you know, he's not groundbreaking. It's not, you know, it's not breaking new ground to have a Irish Catholic guy in his 70s.
From the Northeast.
Yeah, right. That's not, you know, making history. And, you know, I don't think you can ever discount how important it is that having a viable first female president, that is a major thrust in the Hillary campaign.
I want to come back. I want to talk about that. And I also want to talk with our Republicans and everyone and also get your reaction at 1-800-723-8289. And that is the aspect of sympathy. The last time we had this discussion of Joe Biden, it was literally days after the death of his son, Beau. And we talked then about the difficulty of building a campaign based on a sympathetic vote. Is that what this is all about? Sensitive discussion. I want your insight and also our Republicans to weigh in on that when we continue. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce DeMont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8289 or Bruce DeMont at museum.tv if you want to send us an email message. Let's talk with Christine and Marty and, again, everyone. I want to sort of weigh in on this. And that is many people know. I wouldn't say the general public knows this as well as political insiders. But on the night that Joe Biden was elected to the United States Senate, there was a crash, and his wife and young daughter were killed. And his two young sons, who were twins, Beau and Hunter, they were critically injured. And he was a young father. There was some question as to whether or not he would even take the position of the United States Senator, but he did. That's how this man's career began. And now we have late in his life, and when his son is 46 years old, his son loses a battle to cancer. Dealing with sympathy is always difficult, but some would argue, I think, Christine, is that Joe Biden is building his campaign on the promise, perhaps, that was made to his son. And is that political, is that personal commitment of father to son enough credential to be the leader of the free world?
No, but his resume is, as I've said before in this show, I mean, being the vice president of, I mean, I don't call it a successful administration, but Democrats do. So to me, it is a logical step for him to run for president. Yes, it's such a sensitive topic. You can just tell what a close family they are. The tragedy is unspeakable. So he could ride on those coattails or that wave a little bit and garner some sympathy. I don't know how far that's going to get him.
Marty, it will get you somewhere. I think everybody would acknowledge that.
I think it'll
how
get
far
you.
How far does it get you?
I think
you?
It'll get you started, but it doesn't. It can't last. I mean, people aren't going to say, let's see, how is he on? I agree with Scott Walker on this. But Joe Biden's son died. It doesn't, you know, that doesn't win votes, I don't think.
Let me ask the key question that you've heard me talk about this for 30 years on this show. Hmm. If you're the nominee of the Republican Party and Democrat, unless you're way, way out there, you start with 45% of the vote. And a presidential election is about 10%. And who can get 5.1 of that 10%? Those people aren't the people that are watching this show. They don't watch Meet the Press. They're sort of apolitical types. They're the ones that are moved by stories. They're moved by how somebody looks, how their television commercials. Within that valuable 10%, does the sympathy, does Joe Biden's story, when he was a young, 35-year-old senator, and then when he was the sitting vice president of the United States, to lose his wife and two children. And by the way, you lost a child when the child was very young.
So you speak
from an emotional gravitas here.
Yes. I think that's the sort of thing that might help, that might turn the tide or make a difference if it happened a week and a half before the election. I just don't think that in November of 2016, people are going to be saying that Biden's son died a year and a half ago. Or they're going to say, I'm going to vote for him because his son died a year and a half ago or because he had this tragic thing that happened 46 years ago. It doesn't.
Is this also the other practical aspect, going back to our Democrats, is this really something which I've just described, a phenomenon, is that maybe that works in a general election, but it doesn't necessarily help you in a primary?
I actually think it helps him in the primary. I think that it gives his narrative, I think, gives him an edge because it rounds out his character a bit more. So in a situation where you have Hillary, who, again, she does have some very high negatives, there's a narrative more so about her feeling that this is her time, this is her election to win, which was actually the narrative from the prior election as well. And so that might not pull people in as much as the narrative that's humanizing. And I think he has a humanizing narrative that can distinguish him from both Bernie as well as Hillary.
Yeah, he doesn't have an honesty and trust issue.
I don't think,
think
he has,
he's a buffoon or whatever.
Wait. He's the guy who plagiarized. Okay. I mean, he had to leave the race in 1988 because he was caught plagiarizing a British politician's stump speech.
Well stated. I stand corrected.
But he's so likable. He's got to be the most likable candidate on the Republican and the Democratic side.
Don't tell that to Paul Ryan.
Right? But no, he just connects. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen, he gave a speech before Bo passed about, he was talking to like military families that have lost loved ones, and it was like 15 minutes. It was all improvised or extemporaneous. But you can't help but tear up watching the guy just talk about the pain and how you live with that pain. Mm-hmm. I just think it's another manifestation that his authenticity means he's just so likable. And to that 10% you talked about, that matters.
Right. Hubert, listening in Knoxville, Tennessee. Go ahead. You're on the air. Go ahead. Hubert, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Enjoy your show. Listen every week.
Thank you.
I was happy to hear you raise the Biden issue. First of all, let me say, I think, with all due respect, that you saying he would get sympathy votes is just rubbish. I don't think anybody would vote for him for sympathy. I don't think anybody feels sorry for him. I think he would get
support. I disagree with that, but go ahead.
Okay. I think he would get support because he's an excellent candidate. You know, I'm from the generation where we used to call guys regular Joes. He's a regular Joe, no pun intended. He's every man, and so is his story. He's ready, foreign policy, knows how to get legislation passed. I think he's the ideal candidate for the Democrats, and it would turn the focus of this race around away from the Republicans onto the Democrat Party if Joe Biden were to be a candidate.
There's no question about that. A good example is just what happened on the Sunday shows today. Thanks very much for your call. Brian, listening to us in Rosedale, Illinois, on our flagship station, 1590 AM, WCGO. Go ahead.
Good evening, all. I have a little bit of a conspiracy theory. I think that the top Democratic elites want Biden to get in so he can be like the backup quarterback to their star quarterback, Hillary Clinton, who is extremely fragile. She's got several scandals boiling. The handling of classified material as Secretary of State could be a felony offense. You know, and Hillary has zero charisma. She's got the charisma of the average PTA president at your local school. And she just has none of Bill's political talent. She's a terrible liar. Her voice is very grating. And when you look at her, she's like a tired old lady. And this campaign is going to go for a long, long time. And personally, I don't think her health is up to it. I don't think she's got it in her to go the distance.
Christine Svensson, I want you to respond to what Brian – stay on the line, Brian. I want sure. Christine to respond to that. But I want you to specifically focus on his reference, tired old lady. As a woman, not tired or old, but are those words fighting words to women everywhere of every political stripe?
Absolutely. I agree with everything that Brian just said, by the way. But that is one of her biggest problems, although he just enumerated all of them, or almost all of them. She's got many, many, many. But looking old on the campaign stump is not going to bear well for her, no matter how much makeup she puts on.
I think it's interesting, too, that if you look at the two parties, if Brian is right that he's the backup quarterback, he's a 72-year-old backup quarterback. And the Democrats have basically, I don't think they've got anybody under 60. I was going to think maybe Martin O'Malley was, but maybe not. The Republicans, though, have a bench of unbelievable, A, talent, and B, young talent from Rubio and Cruz and Walker. I mean, I think the Republicans have one fellow who's over 60, and that would be Jeb Bush.
Well, one thing that was mentioned,
tacky too, but I'm
one of the things that was mentioned on one of the shows today was that during the Obama, one of the fallouts of the Obama presidency, is the number of Democratic office holders who have lost their jobs in state and legislative races all over the United States. He's basically, or his policies, they've eviscerated the Democratic bench. So you don't have a lot of, I mean, Martin O'Malley is one Democratic former governor, but you don't have like three or four of them that are coming to the fore. Would you acknowledge there's some deficiency insofar as a generational appeal within the Democratic farm team?
I definitely think there is. I mean, it's very interesting to me that the Republican Party is typically held up as disconnected, as homogenous, as old white men, quite frankly. But what we're seeing in this election so far, election season, is that they do have a very vibrant intergenerational bench, whereas the Democrats have...
The Republicans do.
They have a very vibrant, in terms of racial and ethnic diversity, age-wise. And the Democrats do have an older slate of candidates that are vying in the primary. But I think that speaks to just the need for perhaps more groundwork to really build up, again, a groundswell of support, people who are interested in becoming part of the party and staying in there long enough to become viable contenders in a presidential race.
When you hear a caller to this program, like our last caller, an old lady, she looks like an old lady.
A tired old lady.
How do you respond to that as a woman? And would you agree with Christine that maybe he just got some votes for Hillary by using those three words?
Yeah, I do take exception to it. I recognize that in my opinion, there is a double standard. I mean, as women, typically our looks or appearance is held is one of the main factors, whereas for men, it's sort of a side thing. It's an aside. The other candidates are old as well. They're old men, right? But we don't see that being one of the things that they're putting out front as the biggest negative. It's just a side.
But Donald Trump doesn't come across like an old man. I think Jeb Bush does. Maybe not old. Jeb Bush comes across to me tired.
Yeah.
As a tired guy.
Yes.
Especially when he's juxtaposed to a Marco Rubio or a Scott Walker.
Right.
And certainly when anyone is juxtaposed to Donald Trump, they look like they're half asleep.
I think
maybe with the exception of John Kasich, who I think can probably talk. He may be the only person that can talk as fast as Donald Trump. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. When we come back, we'll hear the voice of Spokane, Washington. Don't go away.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlink's now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. We're going to reintroduce our guests in just a moment and also talk a little bit about the Republican debate that's coming up on Thursday night. And again, there's going to be the big one with the top 10, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then there's sort of the, I don't want to say also-rans, but those that didn't quite make it to the first cut, they'll be part of the debate, an earlier debate as well on Fox. By the way, I should also mention, wherever you're listening around the country, this Thursday night, following the debate, I will be taking telephone calls. I'm going to be working for AM 560, The Answer, in Chicago. That's a Salem radio station, and the Republican debate special will be this Thursday at 10 p.m. Central Time. So wherever you're listening around the country, you can go to their website and listen to the broadcast or the debate or watch it on television. But then most importantly, remember this number, 312-642-5600. 312-642-5600. I'll give the number a little bit later on. And wherever you're listening from coast to coast, you can call that number when the debate is over and share your thoughts with the audience here in Chicago. Let me introduce our guests now, or let them introduce themselves. And we begin with Dan Johnson.
Hey, Dan Johnson, father of three, lobbyist. Delighted to be on the show.
Christine Svensson.
I practice election, employment, and family law here in Chicago, and I'm a Northwestern Wildcat. My favorite team is Northwestern Wildcats. We talked about that last time.
Amira Enya.
I am a public policy consultant. I also do community organizing and community development work. And I have to mention, I'm a U of I Urbana-Champaign all the way.
All right.
Artie.
I'm a Republican, or a conservative Republican, retired commercial real estate broker, and I'm the father of six and grandfather of 11.
Wow.
Very good. Well, nice to have you with us tonight. By the way, one other thing coming up on Thursday, if you're in Chicago, John Miller, the voice of the San Francisco Giants, last year's inductee into the Radio Hall of Fame. He will be here at noon. The admission is free that day. Come on down to the museum. If you've got anybody in your life that's interested in sportscasting or is a huge baseball fan, one of the very best of all time will be here. John Miller and our good friend Tom Scheer will be doing the interview with him. Let's go to Mike listening to us on KXLY in Spokane, Washington. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce, for taking my call, and congratulations, late congratulations to the Chicago Blackhawks, Stanley Cup champion.
Okay.
I'm sorry about your severe weather in Chicago. But yeah, Joseph Biden can relate to the person on the street, in the factory, on a first-name basis. He'd be a strong contender. You know, I think his son's tragic death was probably his deciding factor to enter the race, if he does, and he probably will. He's a great Irish politician, if only he were pro-life.
Mm-hmm. If he was only, I didn't get the last part of that, sir.
If only he were pro-life.
Pro-life.
Pro-life, okay.
He's a great politician.
You know, I hear all this adulation for Joe Biden, but there are several video snippets out there of Joe Biden really making young women uncomfortable by touching them while he's inaugurating or swearing in their father or their husband. And I think that the notion of this avuncular Joe Biden would go away pretty quickly. If he were the candidate, my guess is those videos are going to come out and be a prominent part of just of the narrative that the Republicans would make.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, Amara. We talked about all the positive things, or at least the viewed as positive. But again, this guy's got more tape than an old radio station.
Well, he's been an elected official for so long. It's hard not to have tape on you. I think a lot of people don't know or are not aware of that. I'm not sure how big it will factor into the likability of him as compared to his in the primaries, his opponents, and then with the slate of Republicans. I mean, there's many things that at least on the Republican side that will come out, that have come out, that I think that will negatively affect them as well.
Again, somebody gets into the race, you know, they always look better before they get into the race. But again, there is a buffoon factory with Joe Biden.
You know, I remember reading an article. This is a guy who's been, you know, at the till of every major decision of the Obama administration and has been a superstar on delivering, you know, peace and prosperity. I just remember that Paul Ryan debate. He just mopped the floor with him and all that stuff about, yeah, there's some video out here. He's, you know, avuncular and, you know, he would be a phenomenal candidate. He's just like an A-plus candidate. He'd be awesome.
See, the problem that Republicans have is appealing to young women. The young woman vote goes heavily for the Democrats.
Right.
The kinds of videos that are there just in the covering the last 2 or 3 years would be very damning for him and would cost him, I think, a substantial amount of debt.
If he got through the primary. But yeah. A question that I would have in the primary is, where does the president come down on this?
Neutral.
You think he's neutral?
And I disagree with that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Why do you think he's been neutral? Because I'm not so sure I would agree with that, but go ahead.
You know, look, Hillary served admirably. He's united the party. That was one of his best attributes. It's been a totally united party for 8 years. There's no upside to him weighing in. I can't imagine a scenario where he, especially if Joe runs. Look, if it's Bernie versus Hillary, I can see him maybe eventually weighing in for Hillary, but I can't imagine that he weighs in versus with Joe or Hillary, two people that were so central to his administration. I just think that's inconceivable.
Amara?
I'm inclined to agree. I don't know that he would. I mean, this is his vice president that we're talking about, and then his secretary of state.
Who said it was the best political decision he's ever made. That's what the president has said.
Right. I don't see him, at least as of now, I don't see him going for Hillary over Joe. I think he would play a more neutral role in the primary.
Now, it's been reported that they really hate each other.
I mean, we're ignoring.
Did you go that far?
I don't think. What, Hillary and?
No, no, no. The Clintons and the Obamas really do not like each other.
I think that is largely over with. I think it was a masterstroke to appoint her. It was a team of rivals decision. I think their relationship. Look, it wasn't
to appoint her to the least political position there's supposed to be in the cabinet.
She was exceptional as Secretary of State. She did a great job. And so to say this, look, I'm going to say this. In 2007, absolutely, there was a lot of tension between the Clintons and the Obamas in 2007. But in 2015, not at all.
I totally disagree. That tension has not gone away. It's just heightened. Bill Clinton, all he cares about is his legacy. He wants Barack Obama's legacy to go down. They're in two separate camps. Joe Biden is on the Barack Obama team. Hillary Clinton is not. She pretends like she is. She's not. She's on the Bill Clinton team.
I mean, it seems to me that one of the things that the vice president could do is that a Biden presidency would give you a less or it would give you an unvarnished opportunity to vote for a third Obama
term.
There's
no question. That's exactly what it is.
Whereas Hillary doesn't.
It
Does
confirms
everybody agree with that?
Obama's legacy. Barack Obama absolutely wants Joe Biden to be the next president of the United States. I don't see how you could cut it any other way. Valerie Jarrett is on that team. Valerie Jarrett has a ton of tension with the Clintons. They do not get along at all. No, it's an unspoken sort of thing, but everybody knows that Barack Obama's.
Something's been said here a couple of times that this was a successful term as a Secretary of State. There is nothing about Hillary Clinton's term as Secretary of State that's successful. Even when she was asked, she said something like, we change people's attitudes about different things. But if you look across the world, whether it's China, whether it's Iran, Iraq, Syria, South America, Mexico, everywhere you look, there's failure after failure after failure while she was Secretary
no
of State.
No less a politically astute observer like Donald Trump has said she was the worst Secretary of State of all time.
I can't
That's
think
funny
of
he says that question. Because he was a big fan of hers
let's
about 8 years
now.
Ago.
Let's switch gears about this. Let's switch gears and talk about the debate that's coming up on Thursday that I referenced a few moments ago. At this moment, there are several candidates that are hanging on, wondering whether they're going to get the 9th and 10th spot on that debate. Marty Garrity, your favorite looks. Rick Santorum is one of your favorites, correct?
He's one of my favorites.
And he's not going to be on the list.
No, he won't be. Right. Right. Really, my personal favorite is Scott Walker.
Well, he will be there.
He will be there.
And he's your favorite.
Yes, he is.
And I have to tell you that I look at Donald Trump as a self-promoter and is not really a serious candidate. And if Trump should somehow become the nominee, I'm not sure that I could vote for Donald Trump, even against a Democrat like Hillary. Maybe next November, a year from November,
he's
I'll
not a
change
Republican.
Me. Yeah, that's right.
I just want to make sure what I just heard here. If it's Donald Trump running against Hillary Clinton,
I'm not voting.
You're not voting, and you would vote for Hillary?
I will always vote, and I don't know.
But you're not going to vote for Donald Trump?
You know what? Today I can say that in November of 2016 I may change my mind.
What does it say about what Donald Trump is saying and the way he's saying it that has him leading in every single national poll as well as polls in Iowa and New Hampshire? Christine, and by the way, you really ripped him.
I did.
You probably ripped him tougher than anyone's ever been ripped last week on this program.
Wow. Well, he's a reality TV candidate. I mean, he's just in it for headlines and to make more money. And yes, if he gets
the power, but the people are following him. If he gets
the power, great. I mean, more power to him, no pun intended. But he's not a serious candidate. He doesn't stand for anything. He just walks around and says what he thinks at that particular moment. I may happen to agree with what he said last week about immigration. I'm not even sure what he said, so don't quote me on that. But occasionally he has some words of wisdom. But in general, he backtracks and doesn't stand for what he said 5 years ago.
We got to pause.
I don't know what he stands for.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Also, when we come back, I want to talk about those that might not make it to the adult table.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. It appears that Rick Perry and John Kasich and Chris Christie, and they're three of those that are fighting for those last two spots. And you know, it's to me, it's hard to believe because according to at least the discussions on the shows today, is that Rick Perry, who has been the most aggressive in taking on Donald Trump, is the one who literally is probably holding his breath saying prayers tonight because he appears to be the odd man out, and yet he is the longest-serving governor in one of the most pivotal Republican states, solid Republican states in the United States. And again, he's also hanging on is John Kasich, who is the absolute governor of a bellwether state that you must win, and he won his last election by 30 points, and he's hanging on as to whether or not he makes it. So,
and
the debate is in his state, and the convention is in his state. So,
and both of those states are probably the two single most successful states.
Yes.
In terms of just the way states rack up against each other, and yet both of them are hanging on. And
what's the problem with Rick Perry in your view?
Well, I think Rick Perry's problem is 4 years ago. He dropped the ball badly four years ago.
So Republicans don't believe in forgiveness.
It's not forgiveness so much as just it's forgetness. You know, they don't forget.
They don't forgive forgetness.
they don't forget that he had that he struggled, and they don't want to be embarrassed by a candidate who would struggle like that.
Well, let the Democrats sort of weigh across the aisle on those last two. I mean, for the last couple of weeks, I mean, these candidates have been saying outrageous things, doing outrageous things, and it's going to be interesting to see how they interact with Donald Trump.
Well,
he's trying to lower his expectations.
He's definitely lowering his expectations already. I think the issue with Donald Trump is that he sucks all of the air out of the room, and so there's so much attention to what he says because he really doesn't. I mean, I completely agree that he doesn't really stand on anything that is identifiably Republican besides him saying that he's Republican. It's hard to know what he's going to say. And so sometimes he might say something that might resonate with people, and then other times he might say something completely off the wall. And so the biggest issue for the Republicans is that in a field of 17 now, how do you distinguish yourself? And then when you have someone who demonstrates charisma, if you will, and who really has been sort of a firecracker so far, how do you get some of that attention back from Donald Trump?
Once upon a time in 1979 and 1978, there were Democrats that were licking their chops because they couldn't wait for Jimmy Carter to take on this actor governor from California. That's who they wanted to be the Republican nominee. They feared George Bush. But they didn't want. But they were laughing that Ronald Reagan would be the guy. History proved them wrong. Dan, if Donald Trump, by some reason, I don't think this is likely to happen, if he were to end up as the Republican nominee, are you absolutely, positively sure that he would never be president of the United States?
I mean, you can never say never with that hypothetical. But the reality is, it's an embarrassment to the Republican Party that the leading candidate is this buffoon, twice bankrupt, failed businessman.
Four times.
Who built an amazing building in Chicago, right? But it's...
I built buildings. It's
who defrauded people, though, by the way. Defrauded people in doing so.
I mean, it says something embarrassing that enough of the Republican Party electorate are willing to support the guy now. But I will say, it is August. It is early. People can have fun with the, you know, the reality TV star.
You know,
but it is embarrassing that he's the leading
candidate.
What happens is that he's the guy who comes across as somebody who speaks not like all those other stuffed suits. You know, he's the guy who talks like a longshoreman in a way. And here's a
like a caller on a talk show.
Yeah.
He talks like some host, but a talk like a caller. Again, people love that.
How does somebody set himself apart? Think about Joni Ernst. No one ever heard of Joni Ernst, except one day she put out a commercial talking about how she grew up castrating pigs. And all of a sudden, she's every woman or every man. You know. Now, it turns
every
out
woman
that
wanted to do that.
I don't want to think about it. But it turns out that she had a lot of substance, and she's a terrific U.S. senator. But I don't think he has the substance. But that is what made her a candidate, a credible candidate, and then her substance came through and she won the election. I don't think the same substance will be there for Donald Trump.
But every time someone says, like what you said, a buffoon, whatever. Now, you went well beyond buffoonery last week, but when the news media goes after him, his numbers go up. I mean, he's going to find some reason to pick a fight with maybe Chris Wallace,
you know,
a Thursday night.
I kind of feel like he's the Ross Perot of this cycle.
Right.
You know, there's sort of a 20%.
I think 25. He's more the George Wallace, but go ahead.
Well, there's this sort of anti-establishment, a pox in both your houses, you know, tear it down sentiment out there. And I think, interestingly, the rich, eccentric, multimillionaire billionaire happens to be running in the Republican primary this year instead of as an independent like Perot. But he feels to me a lot like the Ross Perot, you know, Reform Party, break it all down kind of.
But that was what Reagan was saying. Now, Reagan wasn't angry. Donald Trump seems to be angry. Mm-hmm. Reagan did it with a smile. Trump does it, you know, with
people
a beck of his
People aren't really
hand.
Looking at Trump's record and who he is. So here he is, a massive real estate developer who's made money off the backs of poor Americans. And secondly, I mean, he's in favor. He loves the Kelo decision, taking away property from people. We all know what the Kelo decision is, correct? So when those things come to light, he's going to be liked a lot less. He has nothing in common with the common man.
The lack of substance will get him ultimately.
That too.
Right.
On that note, we're going to say farewell to our guests for this hour. But however, they will all be back for hour number two. So we hope you will as well. We've got callers on the line. We will hear from them as well in the next hour. 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email us a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And again, stay right where you are. Another full hour of discussion coming up in the next hour. We will also touch base with the Granite State. We'll head to New Hampshire for a portion of the broadcast, and we'll hear what's happening on the ground there in that pivotal state. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway tonight with Marty Garrity, Amira Enya, Dan Johnson, Christine Svensson, and in this hour we're going to be joined by Ben Sorrow. He is the AM talk show host at WNTK, one of our affiliates in New London and Lebanon, New Hampshire. And we're going to turn to him in just a moment, but we do have a call left over from our last hour. It's Dave. Let's go to Dave right away. Go ahead, Dave. You're on the air.
Joe Biden should run as a traditional Democrat. Hillary really is a Nelson Rockefeller Republican, and she's perpetual scandal. Bernie Sanders is a European socialist. Biden will appeal to the silent majority, white working-class voters who did not attend college, and that's a winner. And by the way, Donald Trump is also reaching the silent majority.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, because again you make an interesting point that again the blue collar Democrats mostly are now or Reagan Democrats are now Reagan Republicans or Republicans. Does he have something here in your view?
That's a great point. No, they don't like the Reagan Democrats or blue collar workers do not like Hillary. They're not going to vote for her. They're looking for an alternative. Joe Biden fits that mantra perfectly.
Okay, I'm inclined to agree. I think that Hillary, again, is considered, in, especially in the more progressive circles, to be more of a corporate Democrat, more of a centrist. The line between she and the Republicans might be a little bit more blurred. And so Biden represents the alternative. I think they might not be as familiar with who Bernie Sanders is. There's questions about if he's a socialist, if he's not. And so Biden represents sort of a middle ground between those two extremes.
You said earlier that Joe Biden has sort of respected the importance of having the first female president of the United States. How does he measure that against the decision he's about to be making?
I think it's tough. I think it's a real issue for Biden because, look, I'm supporting Bernie Sanders against Hillary Clinton because I believe in everything that he stands for. But it's pretty clear Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee absent Joe Biden running. So it is kind of – it's something to say I'm going to stop history from being made. I think it is a real factor for him to consider. But having said that, I want to challenge the caller, maybe some of our friends around the table a little bit. You know, Hillary Clinton was kind of wiping the floor with Barack with those white working class voters in Ohio and Pennsylvania in the 08 primary.
But Joe Biden is white.
There's no doubt. But I think we might be overstating the case to which Hillary Clinton does not connect with white working class voters. I think there is a strong affinity there. And I think it's not accurate to say that she doesn't connect with, you know, lower income, working class Democratic voters, because she sure did real well in the primary, and I don't think that's all gone away.
Again, but even against the message of Bernie Sanders, doesn't he connect with some of those people as well?
It's interesting, right? Bernie Sanders' base are highly educated white people. Right. Mm-hmm. And his message, and he, you know, says himself, look, I'm not a liberal, you know, I'm just like a regular, you know, a populist. But for whatever odd reason, it resonates most with educated, higher income people, and it doesn't educate with sort of the demographic that he's trying to speak most directly towards.
But if she's running as you know, she's using the gender, hopefully to her view or her positive as she views it. How does Joe Biden step forward and again? So you know, I'm going to stand in the way again. I'm going to be a male Democrat, and I'm going to stand in the way again to stop a woman from winning the nomination. How does he do that?
I don't know,
Amara,
that he's saying that it's him stopping a woman from winning the nomination, because in 2008, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we had the first potential African-American president and the first woman. And her running, or it wasn't necessarily standing in the way of Barack, and his running wasn't necessarily standing in the way of Hillary. I think ultimately it just comes down to if they believe that this is their time, that they can do the job. And yes, I'm sure he would not want to be the one that gets in the way, but I don't think that he would... I don't think that in making his decision, he would say, well, I don't want to stand in the way of history, so therefore I'm not going to do it, especially if the factor with his son and feeling that this is a part of a legacy that he's wanting to do because he had the backing of his family. If that's a factor,
I get back to what we talked about in the first hour. That's a personal legacy. I understand that if Maureen Dowd's story, and it's, if you have not read it, it's a very poignant story in her column today about the you know, the basically the dying words of Bo saying that his father should, he wished that he could get him to convince him that he was going to run. Read the exact description of it, but it's very, very poignant. But it seems to me that he's doing it because of a pledge to his son who was dying. And we all know he wanted to be president. I mean, every U.S. senator here is hail to the chief. We know he wants it, but is that a rationale for being president? Just like, and by the way, on the Republican side, I would say, you know what, I don't know whether the people of the United States have got to make Jeb Bush feel good about himself because his younger, maybe less educated or articulate brother got to be the White House more than he. It's almost like a sibling rivalry, and do we have to pay the price to feed his whatever he has to be fed?
Right. This is a. I mean, there's no monarchy in America anymore. I mean, there's no entitlement as much as Hillary or even Jeb may think that there is. And who cares about sibling rivalries and all that stuff? No, we want the best leader to be elected as president of the United States. I think all Americans.
You do, but women who are basically saying, you know, we've got to elect Hillary because she's a woman.
That infuriates me, I got to admit.
Well, but
that makes no sense to me.
Isn't that a big part of her appeal, though?
No question that is very appealing to a lot of people.
I don't understand that. I don't relate to that at all.
If I'm Joe Biden, I think I sit back and wait for 2 or 3 more months. At the last day of every month, there are going to be more emails put out by the State Department. And one of those emails or one of those days' worth of emails is going to have more bad news for Hillary, and she goes away.
She testifies in October. October 22nd.
But then some more emails come out because of this Judge Sullivan, I think it is, who's probably an Irish Catholic white guy. But these emails come out, and I don't think she can survive.
She can't survive all of these. She's in big trouble. She's violated federal law.
Biden gets by with not being the guy who kicks her out. She gets kicked out herself, and he's there to pick up the standard.
A key part of this that we've not talked about is obviously what made Barack Obama unique and historic, you know, in 2008 was that he had like almost a 95% plus support of the black community and their allegiance to the Democratic Party. Who in this field now? There's no one in the field that's going to get to that level of support because of the historic nature that Barack Obama represented. How do these other candidates pick up that important piece, Amara?
They have to speak to the issues. They have to understand what are the key issues in the African-American community nationwide. We know what they are locally here in Chicago. What are they nationwide? And they have to be willing to speak to them. I can recall earlier when a lot of the issues around police brutality were coming up, and even with the shooting in South Carolina where the slate of Republican candidates were almost averse to calling it what it was. And I thought that was very damaging, whereas only one, Ben Carson, spoke frankly about what motivated that. And I think that's how you connect with black voters. Is speaking
and
to
and
their
the Republican
issues.
Governor Nikki Haley of South. She was the one that spoke for, I think, a lot of people and changed history. 1-800-723-8289. We're going to talk more about this when we come back. But first, we're going to head to the Northeast and New Hampshire. Back shortly.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for being with us. Nice to have you with us from coast to coast and border to border. And we're going to head now to the Northeast, as we said. And Bob Sarrell joins us. He is the morning personality and newsman and covering everything else, but the morning drive time guy on WNTK, which is one of our oldest affiliates. Ben, nice to have you back on the show.
Bruce and your panel, just greetings from the first in the nation state.
Well, we want to know what we've been talking about looking ahead to this coming Thursday and the big debate in Cleveland with the top 10 Republican candidates. And most of them have been traipsing through the Granite State. So at this moment in time, let's focus specifically on the Republican side. Who are those that are making a dent in the state?
Well, I think, just like everybody says, I guess Jeb does to a certain extent. I have some comments on his following, though. But, you know, I carry a wide circle. And let me say the area that I cover isn't necessarily the most conservative of Republicans. We certainly do have conservative Republicans. Mm-hmm. But a lot of libertarians, a lot of independent-minded Republicans in this area. So I'm finding that you've seen a good – Scott Walker's coming on strong. I would say that Rand Paul is showing very well. Carly Fiorina has been getting standing room only crowns here. Ben Carson's getting some name recognition, too.
What about Donald Trump?
I forget about, you know, I'm one of those people who says this is still a publicity stunt. He says things that are absolutely outrageous. It almost seems like, okay, maybe this is the comment that I'll make that'll get me out of this thing. And he just seems to get more and more people. And I think what resonates with people is that he says whatever's on his mind. And I think for a lot of people in New Hampshire, a state that's known for a certain amount of wit and sarcasm and straightforwardness, I think that does resonate with people, and he does get a following. I'm not sure, though, if it's policy or if it's fame. I'm kind of on the fence on that one.
Now, what about, let's throw some of the, I don't want to say also-rans, but some of the candidates that you don't hear talked about a lot, and obviously one of the newest candidates is John Kasich. It seems to me that his brand of, I hate to say moderate, because that's a kiss of death in a primary, but his moderate tone, maybe that would play well in the Northeast? Mm-hmm.
He's going to have a hard time getting traction just because the ground game's been in place for so long now. I mean, think about this. Traditionally, this is really the start. We're already 4 to 5 months into this primary. And so he's coming up from behind. I think he does play well. He's done very good things in Ohio. So whether he has enough time to get his name out there and get the response that he needs to pick people up. Kasich is interesting because what you just said a second ago, I think this is where people are. He used the word compassionate recently, and that reverberated around this area. Mm. Because we don't need another compassionate conservative, and I think that hurts him.
Well, that was certainly a term that he used frequently, and I guess if he gets on that stage on Thursday night, he's going to bring that up again. But Christine Svensson, one of our Republicans, she has a question for you, Ben.
Sure.
So what are you thinking about, what are people saying about Scott Walker?
Scott Walker, to me, and I want to go back to Jeb Bush for a second. Scott Walker, to me, is the true front runner in New Hampshire. Look, I run in wide circles today. I was in another part of the state. I was at a Bass Pro Shops. Now, that's a Republican crowd. And I was striking up conversations with people. I have yet, in 6 months, had anybody say to me, Jeb Bush is my guy. Nobody has gone there. I can't meet anybody that's going to Bush. Scott Walker is a name that keeps coming up. Like I said, Rand Paul comes up a lot too, as does Ted Cruz. But Scott Walker is the name they keep trumpeting. I think that he's really the true front runner. I should point out, I did have somebody today tell me they were going to go with Jeb Bush, and then they revealed to me that they worked for him in Osceola County, Florida, when he was the governor. Mm.
Who are the political leadership of the state, the Republican political leadership in the state? Have they all signed up for a particular candidate, or are they still out in free agency?
Look, the tone is that they say, well, we don't pick anybody. You know, we let the chips fall where they may. But the fact is, the establishment Republicans want Jeb Bush. And I don't know if it's necessarily based on policy. It's based on the ability to raise money. And that's the one thing that Jeb Bush has going for him, is that ability to raise money. I think Scott Walker, though, is another one that comes in strong on for the establishment, as does Chris Christie, because the money is a big part of it. There does seem to be a strong push, though, towards governors, and that is something I'm picking up from people on the street and the, like you said, the leadership.
Right. Also with us this evening is Dan Johnson. He's a Democrat, and he has a question for you, Ben.
Ben, Bernie Sanders has been drawing the largest crowds of any presidential candidate of either party, and, you know, he's next door in Vermont. What's your sense of the Bernie Sanders traction in New Hampshire?
Well, first let me say one thing in a moment, in a shameless self-promotion. About 2 weeks ago, I started asking the question, if Bernie's still in rooms and auditoriums and Hillary's getting a few people, what's the difference between a socialist and a Democrat? So I'm taking credit for that, but you hit it on the head. We have an interesting relationship with Bernie because he is next door. He's in the news all the time. Half of our news comes out of Vermont, where I am in New Hampshire. And today he was in my listening area, had a full room of people. He's resonating. And one thing I think that people don't realize about Bernie is he resonates with independents. It's not just Democrats. Mm. And it's kind of that thing that I said about Trump. I think Chris Christie falls into this. there's a view of Bernie Sanders, even for the people who don't like his policies, they say, I know where he stands. That's resonating. And I'll tell you another thing in this area. We are a rural area in New Hampshire. It shouldn't be a big issue. I think that the economy and jobs should be number one, but firearms is a big part of this. I think that's very tough for Hillary. This is an area. Vermont's got some of the loosest gun laws in the country, upheld by a largely liberal House and Senate over there. Guns matter around here, and I think with Bernie, they can trust him, or they feel they can trust him more than they can trust Hillary.
Does that, on that particular issue, we talked earlier in the broadcast about the possible boomlet for Joe Biden. Joe Biden has a very strong, gun record. Basically, the NRA has been after him for years. Would Biden not be a strong candidate in New Hampshire because of just the issue that you referenced, and also tie that into the fact that Hillary Clinton, this was really the comeback for Hillary Clinton against Barack Obama in 2008.
I haven't heard anybody talk about Joe Biden at all. One thing that I have heard is he's run two or three times before. He hasn't been able to get the nomination. Of course, we know about the first time that resonates with people, and I just don't see him being viable. And one thing that somebody brought up to me the other day, and I thought it was a reasonable point, the vice presidency is sort of seen as a continuation of the current administration, and a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, if the current administration feels they're doing so well, why are they running Hillary Clinton really as their heir apparent rather than the vice president? And I think that view is pretty strong around here. I haven't heard the name Biden said by anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, perhaps that may change if he decides to throw his hat into the ring.
Sure.
Insofar as at the moment, then the celebrity of Donald Trump has not hit New Hampshire. Or is it because he's just one of those guys in from New York?
No.
One of those fast-talking New Yorkers.
Yeah, I think you missed. I might have not been clear. He's got a lot of traction here. What my point was is that I'm not sure if it's celebrity that's driving that or if it is actual policy. That's the big question. I will say he's getting traction because people see him as a straight talker. And around here, that's real important. They want somebody who tells you when the sky's blue, you call it blue. That's
Marty Garrity's got a comment, one of our other Republicans.
And doesn't that straight talker thing depend heavily on people being convinced that he really believes what he's straight talking? I mean, Bernie Sanders, whatever you think of Bernie Sanders' policies, you at least know that for the last 40 years, he's believed in them. But it may be the last 40 weeks or so that Donald Trump has been pro-life instead of being in favor of Planned Parenthood. And he's been against Hillary instead of inviting her to his wedding. Does that not distinguish him from Bernie Sanders in terms of conviction and his beliefs?
The fact is that people who are going to vote for Donald Trump aren't going to vote for Bernie Sanders and vice versa. So I don't think that there's any separation needed between the two. It's already there. The thing with Trump is that, like I said, I think it's celebrity driven right now. I don't think that it's policy driven. The straight talking point, I think that people do like. They see it as straight talking. He hasn't spent enough time here to have anybody hit him hard on this date. 15 years ago, you said, or 40 days ago, you said you were pro-life. He hasn't spent enough time here for those questions. When he starts spending that type of time, it's going to come. I'll tell you where he's going to get hurt, though, is this week. He's got another debate on Monday. 14 candidates he dropped out, citing a bad editorial from the Union Leader paper as the reason he's not going to be there. That's not going to go well and could hurt him here.
Who is the Union Leader cheering for? That's the most influential paper in the state, and they usually get their way. But who are they touting this year?
it'll be a while before they make that decision. I can't draw a line. I'll tell you what, next time Drew Klein, the editor of the Political Page, is on, I'll say, who are you trumping for? No pun intended.
Okay. Listen, Ben, thanks very much. That's Ben Sarrell. He is the morning host on WNTK, one of our oldest affiliates. And say hello to our good friend Bob Vinicor, who put this program on the air back in 1992. We've been on there a long time. When we were in New Hampshire covering this guy by the name of Bill Clinton, who wanted to be president of the United States. Back shortly from Chicago.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. Let me move over for those of us watching this on television. I'm a little off center here. Let's let our guests introduce themselves. I am the man in the middle. Dan Johnson, tell everybody about who you are and why you're here. And the meaning of life.
It's about love, Bruce.
Yes.
It's about love. We've only got 10 decades. You got to make the most of it. So I am a progressive lobbyist. I'm actually working on a book. I'm going to put that out there for the public shame if I don't get it done.
And what's it called?
I think it's going to be called How to Change Laws. Okay. Yes, I'm a lobbyist, so it's
that's
people
ought
to get into it. It's fun.
Yeah. Christine Svensson.
So, yes, I have a day job where I practice law, and I dabble in this stuff. This is my true love. I love politics. I eat, sleep, and breathe it just any chance that I can get.
What was the first candidate that you were moved by?
Well, my mom ran for Congress in 1994 against Phil Crane.
Okay.
Yes. Very exciting.
Nice.
All right. Also joining us this evening is Amara Enya.
Yes. So I'm a public policy consultant. So I do a lot of work in economic development, housing, workforce development around the city of Chicago. I do community organizing work as well. So just in different neighborhoods around the city. And I do a lot of writing. So I have a blog called The Municipal Maven. And I just talk about comparative policies, international cities, Chicago, and the public.
And you ran for mayor of Chicago.
Yes, I did.
What prompted you to do that?
Well, the city is facing some very significant challenges, and I believe that we need a different kind of leadership with different ideas about how to grow the economy, how to unite a city that was very divided, how to make sure that we can enhance the quality of life for everyone. And so I believed that I was qualified, and I felt a very strong sense of responsibility, and I don't believe in waiting for other people to do what you can do. So I put my head in the ring.
And how would you describe the way you were treated by the press, the public, and the political operatives of the world?
Well, I think once they figured that I wasn't crazy, I mean, the initial reaction was there's some crazy lady from the west side of Chicago that said she's running for mayor. And so understandably so, I kind of came out of nowhere, even though I had been doing this work. I worked in the administration under Daley. I worked in the mayor's office. I was doing policy. So I'm not a stranger to this work. So once they got over the initial shock, we were actually very well received. People, I think, were really and still are thirsty for a breath of fresh air, a different perspective, an authentic voice that's rightly motivated, that it's not, there's no baggage there. And people were really craving that.
But Willie Wilson, because he is a multimillionaire, he was given instant credibility because of his millions, not because of his work.
Yes, he certainly was. I think that speaks to one of the downsides of this. He's also the person who knocked me off the ballot. Money is important. Money is a huge factor. And unfortunately, it keeps a lot of potentially great candidates from even entering that space because they lack it. But I think that we have to, if we're really wanting to change things, you have to put your hat in the ring. And we can't let that be the sole determinant that keeps you out of the process.
Marty Garrity, you threw your hat in the ring once.
Oh, a long time ago. I was born to a pair of Irish immigrants more than a few years ago, and I grew up a Chicago Democrat. I thought that Mayor Richard J. Daley was terrific. I thought it was one had to be a Democrat. And in 1964, I knew that Barry Goldwater was crazy because that's what I was hearing. And so I said, I got to read this guy's book just to find out how crazy he is. And I read chapter one. I said, gee, he's right about that. Oh, chapter two, he's right about that. And I became a conservative. There's no more important book in my life.
A Conscience of a Conservative.
The Conscience of a Conservative is the most persuasive book I've ever written or I've ever read. I wish I had written it. it changed my life politically.
Well, you know, at that point, you mentioned 1964. In 1964, growing up in Park Ridge, Illinois, Hillary Rodham was a Goldwater girl.
I know.
She was turned down by Barry Goldwater.
Right.
And while she was basically out in Maine Township passing out Goldwater buttons, Bernie Sanders was at the University of Chicago joining SNCC and CORE and all of the other social justice movements of the 1960s. And that's what they were both doing in 1964. And I don't know whether she's ever totally explained how she moved from that policy to the one that she emerged in her public life and meeting Bill Clinton. But perhaps if she becomes the nominee, there'll be more discussion about that transformation in her life, especially, you know, the two of them being in the same city, basically, one in the suburbs, one in the city, two of the key players in the Democratic Party right now. Bob, in Evanston, Illinois, you've been standing by a long time, waiting on 1590 AM, WCGO. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about Trump a little bit. I don't think people really paid any attention to where this guy stood on policy in the past. You guys mentioned eminent domain. He's used it to take private property, to try to take it from small individuals and give it to politically connected people. He was in favor of single payer health care plan, government monopoly over health care. I mean, three years ago, he said that Hillary Clinton was great. I mean, he's been pro abortion his whole life. He's given to the Clinton Foundation over $100,000. I mean, the guy could be a mole for Hillary to help.
I brought that subject up, and it was something that George Will brought up. You know, on Fox, this goes back almost 6 weeks ago, or maybe 5 weeks ago, when we talked about that. I brought up because of that at that particular point. You know, who was he never, other than saying that she was the world's, you know, worst Secretary of State, which a lot of Republicans have said. I mean, because of the personal nature. I mean, given, as you say, the money trail and everything else. You know, the idea that he was a mole is not so far fetched. At least it would be far more believable in a European context than an American context, but we do have conspiracies here as well.
He's a capitalist. I mean, he wants big government. He wants to use big power. He's not a leader for freedom or limited government. So I think people need to take a closer look at this guy because he's a joke.
Well, we'll find out. He's going to be center stage because of his position. Literally, he is going to be literally and figuratively center stage at the debate in Cleveland, which Fox is going to carry. And again, a reminder, right after the debate, if you go and give us a call at 312-642-5600, I will be moderating or taking phone calls immediately after the debate on AM 560, The Answer in Chicago. And again, you can find that on the World Wide Web as well. But again, 10 p.m. Central, as soon as the debate is over, if you want to weigh in on who you thought did well. But wait, watch the debate before you come up with your opinion, okay? We don't want talking points. But again, Bob, thank you for your call. We do appreciate it. Let's go to Sioux Falls, South Dakota, where Terry is listening to us on XM Satellite Radio Night. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. You know, I want to comment on Donald Trump. I'm no fan of Trump. I'm a Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe firmly that the reason he is doing so well everywhere is because of the illegal immigration issue. Politicians and the media have blurred the line between illegal and legal immigration for various different reasons. The American people have not. It is the American people who are living with the impact daily of all of the people that are here illegally. And it's not because Trump is a celebrity. It's not because he's, you know, a big blowhard or a bully. It is because he is addressing an issue that the American people outside of the Beltway
yep.
are dealing with on a daily level. I can't believe that politicians nobody ever brings up, What about our water resources? How are we going to be able to keep water for all these people? What about our natural resources? The more people that we have, the less we're going to have for our wildlife and our natural heritage. These are things that the politicians and the media are just breezing over. But the American people, and I'm a Democrat, I'm a Bernie Democrat, but if it comes down to Hillary or Donald Trump, I can't believe it, but I'll vote for Donald Trump because I think illegal immigration is the movement for this election. You know, the American people, just it's everywhere, and we are the ones dealing with the daily impact on many different levels. Until the media can get that right, or the politicians.
Well, I agree with you. The media has definitely weighed in on one side in this debate, and they have for the last 10 years. Dan.
Terry, it's interesting you mentioned that. There was a recent Bernie Sanders interview in Vox, and he kind of got some flack because he took the position closer to you that he's not, you know, what he calls an open borders liberal, and he's not sort of closer to the, you know, the populist position on immigration. So it's interesting. I didn't realize that maybe that's sort of like, you know, he's a big gun guy. Bernie Sanders is.
Yeah.
He's you know, not a big immigration guy, but he's saying, look, college should be free, healthcare should be free, everyone should have Medicare. That's sort of part of that populist strain, which I think people feel is long overdue.
Christine?
And not only that, you know, when it comes to Bernie, but he doesn't speak out about illegal immigration and how it's all okay, because his passion truly is for the working people. That's why he's resonating. He speaks to my issues, and I think he's speaking to a lot of people's issues, and that's why I don't think you've heard him come out as strong as Hillary talking about, yeah, the you know, illegal immigrants, everybody's legal, blah, blah, blah. No, the American people, every time you hear somebody say something about Trump and that he's a celebrity, and that's why, think about it. It is because of illegal immigration.
No, I totally agree with that. The fact that a celebrity said that, it just made it powerful. And then, you know, there are these other issues that he basically inherited, or he was in the right place. There was the tragic murder of the young woman out in San Francisco. That was a tragic story, but it fed his narrative, it fed his campaign rhetoric, and then of course there was the escape of Chiapas, the drug lord in Mexico. Two issues that he had no control over, but they've all fed what he initially said about Mexico, and that Mexico is not sending the best and the brightest to the United States. Back shortly from Chicago.
Yeah, I can guarantee you that.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Well, I'll tell you, we're back. I was just making the point, you probably saw this or read about it this past week, that in one city in Iran town, it was 165 degrees. I can't even imagine what 165 degrees.
We are cooking our planet. 165 degrees, that's uninhabitable. It's freaky.
It is
scary.
That is happening, but there's no evidence, no serious evidence, that we are doing the cooking. Temperatures have dropped from 1998 to today.
I will tell you, on a political basis, the more Republicans say that climate change is a myth, the better we're going to do in November.
Climate change may not be a myth. The cause of climate change is the question.
Oh, I got it. Human-caused climate change. If Republicans take that line, it's going to be clearer that the too much of the party's bought into the fossil fuel industry and this Chicken Little idea.
You keep telling people that they got to give up their heat and their air conditioning because coal is too...
You've got to have a modern economy, not a 1920s
and
economy.
That'll depend on solar and wind.
That's right. Absolutely right.
That's ready to go, isn't it?
Yes, and matter of fact,
gentlemen,
it is.
During the break, you wanted to talk about the Iran deal. So I was going to the Iran
Thank
deal.
You, right. Thank you.
The Iran deal. Are you for it or against it?
I'm enthusiastically for it.
Enthusiastically supportive.
I think it's
Why?
A triumph of diplomacy. And I wondered, what is the opposition for, right? And I started to say, like, why would people oppose finally having a diplomatic agreement with one of our enemies that we could start bringing this country into the community of nations, and most importantly, actually have a way to stop Iran from getting a nuclear bomb?
Can you imagine that there would be a difference of opinion when the president says that inspections are going to be any place, any time, and the final deal gives them 24 days of notification? Can you understand why some people might say, I don't like that idea? And some people also might say, you know, you're not saying that Iran can't have nuclear weapons. You're saying they're not going to have them for 10 years. So your children and your children's children are going to be dealing with something that you're supporting right now. I mean, can you understand that reasonable people can disagree on that because it's a fact of life?
I think, yeah. So here's my point. I think it's really easy for people to say, boy, this agreement's not nearly strong enough. We don't have an ironclad guarantee that Iran will never have a nuclear bomb. Here's where I think we miss out on the conversation. So then what are we proposing as the alternative? Because what most Republicans have been saying is, well, the deal's not strong enough, so either I'm implicitly saying we should do what Senator McCain suggested and go to war, or they say, you know, I like diplomacy. That's great. I just want to somehow put more sanctions on and somehow force Iran to a stronger deal. But that becomes in the realm of fantasy. And I think it's not reasonable.
Why is it fantasy that you couldn't put more sanctions on them?
That you think because you can get Iran to agree after the triumph of 3 years ago when they elected a moderate president. That was wonderful. After our country has had unclean hands in Iran. Remember, our CIA is the one that created a coup and turned a peaceful democratic state that was going to nationalize their oil fields and installed a ruthless dictator, which led directly to the 1979 revolution. So then to say, let me finish my point. Mm-hmm. Then to say, we're going to now force Iran to come to an agreement, we're not going to beat them and make them capitulate to an agreement. We're going to have them somehow by strength, have them agree to something, which is hard for another country to do. It's a fantasy.
Ancient history, which is the 1970s, matters not a whit here. We've got a guy who's saying death to America, destroy Israel. And then he gets 24 days to hide his nuclear facilities, and we can't even look at if he hides them in a military post. We can't even go there. And this is a guy that you're supposed to trust to make a deal with. If he's saying kill America, kill Israel, and I'm not letting you see what I'm doing, how can that be good? What can you do? You can persist in the sanctions that even brought these guys to the table and make them suffer even more. Presumably, their economy is being crushed by the sanctions. And so, what does Barack Obama do? Let's give him $150 billion to buy more warheads.
I get my turn,
Amara.
I think that there's an. I actually agree. So Jeffrey Sachs, the economist, made, I thought, a very good point about the Iran deal. I think that the dynamics globally between the United States and other countries have changed over the last few decades. The art of diplomacy, I think we actually moved away from, particularly in the last 15 to 20 years. And so to get to this deal, it's not saying that it's a perfect deal, but being able to diplomatically work out an agreement. Yes, it's not perfect, but at least it gets us to this particular point. And it's not that this is what will stand in perpetuity. I think that is much more important, especially when we think about the implications of war.
Doesn't it lead to an arms race?
I don't believe that it leads to an arms race. I actually
Why
think
doesn't
this
Saudi
deal,
Arabia want a weapon then?
I, I'm not.
They want one now. That's the thing. This is the safest path. There is no safer path.
There is a safer path.
No, there's no safer path besides saying somehow we're going to threaten invading Iran. And that's going to force them.
If this were such a wonderful piece of diplomacy, why is it that so many Democrats are on the fence about it and very concerned about it, number one? Number two, we don't really know the ins and outs of this deal. There are so many side compartments to this deal that Iran has sort of side deals with the IAEA, United Nations, whatever, that we don't even know about.
That's not true. There is one hyper-technical document. That's it. That's it. Hyper-technical document.
We are not the arbiters of the soil levels. Like, we're not the ones that actually get to go in there. I don't trust the IAEA. I don't trust any of those people. So I don't think this is a good deal. I think we should be walking away, and no, it does not mean war.
And then it means they get the bomb faster.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
No,
because
they collapse because their economy is gone.
I get it. And if they collapse, what do you think they're going to do to get themselves stronger? Exactly what they were doing before, a crash course to get the bomb. We have the safest possible alternative for our country, which the rest of the world agrees with, and Republicans want to beat their chest.
Democrats.
Yeah.
Democrats.
France, Germany, China. The U.K.,
they want
Russia,
to sell
everybody
to
agrees
Iran.
With
that's
it.
Right. It's all about money.
This is crony capitalism run amok.
They are out of time. I want to thank Marty Garrity and Amira Enya, Dan Johnson, and Christine Svensson for their assistance by being our guests this evening, and also to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of the program. Again, Thursday night at 10 o'clock Central Time. Tune in on The Answer, AM 560, and join us in response to the Republican presidential debate live from Cleveland on Fox. Thanks very much. I'll see you next week. This is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.